The Nazino affair is one of the darkest secrets in the history of the Soviet Union. This plan, adopted by Stalin, called for the forced relocation of undesirables in Russian cities to wilderness areas in an alleged effort to encourage agricultural growth. In reality, these forced settlers were being sent to an island of nightmares that few would survive.
Missing, hidden, the podcast about bad things.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Killing, Missing, Hidden. I'm your host of this podcast, Brad, and I gotta tell you, I'm just struggling to do this one this week. It's just you people expect so much out of me. I'm your little dancing monkey that has to show up every Tuesday. I know how it is. And I resent you all of you for it. But not our newest KMH Plus subscriber. That would be Danny Bag O' Donuts. I don't need to say anything else about somebody with such a fantastic name. Clearly, he will be in charge of donuts in the new regime. So, yeah, I hope today's episode finds you well because it's going to ruin your good mood. Yeah, it's a heavy one. It's arguably one of the worst of the worst that we've covered. Of course, not getting down and dirty with some of the details, but It's a situation so bad that the leaders of the Soviet Union found it icky, okay? And if that says anything, that should really impact you. So maybe not a good episode for little ears, but, you know, you're a parent. You don't tell me how to run my life. I'm not going to tell you how to run your life. I will also give the warning that my children have friends, which is shocking to me, and they are currently over, so if we hear screaming or door banging or whatnot in the background, I'm not going to re-record because of that. I'm too tired. It's been too long a week. We're all going to be happy that this episode got recorded. That's where we are. One thing I need to point out, too, is there's an odd dispute in this case that I am going to take the minority position on. So this story takes place on an island, and most articles refer to it as Nazino Island. But I found several more like scholarly works that referred to it as Nazinsky Island, with Nazino being the closest town to this island. It's an island in the middle of a big river. And so it seems like some publications are naming the island after this town, while some people with, you know, fancy letters after their name are saying, oh, no, no, this is Nazinsky Island. So I'm going to follow the academic nerds. They're right more often than they're wrong. That also makes me feel smarter to be included in their company. But if you do any research on this, be aware that it's called Nazino Island in a bunch of articles. Plus the whole situation, as you may have noticed from the name of the episode, is referred to as the Nazino Affair. So, you know, with that, we'll begin this haunted hayride into these dark Soviet mysteries. Enjoy! If you happen not to be that much of a history buff, let me give you a little bit of a background here, okay? Now, the one thing we all know about Joseph Stalin is what a compassionate soul he's remembered as, right? As the leader of the Soviet Union, and we immediately think of all the enlightened manners in which he ruled for decades. I seem to remember reading one time that his nickname was the Velvet Fox for how swiftly he was able to provide comfort and aid to his people. Yeah, all that's totally bunk. In case you know little to nothing about Stalin, he was a communist dictator who was primarily concerned with consolidating power, just kind of like every dictator in history. He's famous for quotes such as, "One death is a tragedy, 1 million is a statistic," and "Death is a solution to all problems." And one that I kind of like, "Gratitude is a sickness suffered by dogs." He would probably be in your top three villains of the 20th century, likely behind Hitler and Mao. Most people who study these things say that Stalin was responsible for 6 million peacetime deaths, with another 3 million foreseeable deaths on top of that. And apparently these were things like, you know, folks who died in prison or who were deported, as we're going to talk about today, or just folks he allowed to starve. If you want to throw in wartime deaths, because Stalin was there for WW2 and some other fun things, you can add another 8 million directly onto his tab, with another 20 million souls who died of disease and famine resulting from these wars. You know, to kind of paraphrase the Black Widow from the MCU, he's got a bit of red in his ledger. So that's 37 million lives he's responsible for taking from this earth in one form or another. And we're going to talk about one of Stalin's experiments that added to that tally. You know, the Soviet Union's never really had a reputation for being very inclusive. It was constantly looking for ways to get rid of what it called undesirables, which, you know, we could define and discuss, you know, the socioeconomic definition and all that. But really, it was just people who didn't have money or political power. In February 1933, in the pursuit of helping cleanse the Soviet Union and to brown-nose Stalin, the head of the secret police and the head of the Gulag labor camp system, two guys you really want working together, right? They came up with this proposal and they pitched it to Stalin. And their proposal was basically, what if, instead of keep throwing people into work camps or prison, we just kind of relocated them to Siberia, to Nezinsky Island, which they described as virgin land, where, you know, we can make this new settlement, teach them how to farm, and create, you know, more agricultural opportunities throughout the motherland. Because the Soviet Union was kind of always strapped for food. And so they were kind of always in a chase to find new ways to get some more grain out there to keep the people from starving and dying. Now, you know, even though these two just role models of guys pitched this idea to Stalin, it really wasn't an original idea. Back in 1917, it had been tried by the Soviet Union somewhat successfully. If we remember that kind of most everything the Soviet Union did was not great. They took 2 million kulaks, or Russian peasant landowners, who had been kind of forced into urban areas because of war, and said, we're going to give you farmland. Now, what they were doing was, you know, these were land-owning people who had kind of had to flee, and so the Soviet Union said, hey, this is a great way to get their land. So they took this good agricultural land and then sent all these farmers out into kind of the Soviet wilderness or the Russian wilderness to try to make more agricultural land. It also was nice, you know, for the leaders of the Soviet Union that a lot of these kulaks were kind of dissidents and weren't really sold on communism being the bee's knees. And, you know, ultimately the Soviet Union chalked this up as a great success. I think, you know, again, out of the 2 million kulaks, only 500,000 died during this relocation. And you know, the fact that the leadership gave it a big old check plus, that's what really matters here. Fun fact, the program was actually still technically going on when Stalin became the head guy in charge, but it mutated its, away from its original purpose. And in doing so, another 4 million or so had died. No biggie. It showed promise. So why not try it again? One tiny little detail that had changed between the relocation of the Kulaks and this this new relocation idea was that the Soviet economy was in a different shape, shall we say. A tiny bit more worse off. So, like, when the Kulaks were relocated, they were given things like tools and bread and, you know, plants, seeds, kind of what you would need to have a chance at survival. Well, at this point, the Soviet Union was just kind of tapped out. So basically, they were going to relocate these settlers and wish them well. There was no resources to give them, you know, but the Soviet, they were strong people, right? And Stalin was certain they could find a way to thrive despite this lack of resources. Or maybe he just didn't give a crap and wanted these people out of his way. I'm not a history expert, so it could be either one. So this original plan was to make sure the bulk of these new settlers, as they were being called, came from regions where the lads were born with farming skills in their blood. But as we all know, politics is kind of a game of compromises. So instead of recruiting farmers, they ended up just recruiting people who didn't have a passport. See, they had this weird system in place. Things were different in Soviet times. So not only did you need a passport, you know, to travel amongst countries, but you needed an internal passport. And this was an initiative that was created, you know, to make sure that true Soviet communists could be identified easier. But in this, you know, passport craze implementation, the real goal really was, you know, let's cleanse Moscow, let's cleanse Leningrad, let's cleanse all these large cities of superfluous elements who didn't help with manufacturing or administrative work. Plus, you know, criminals, other dangerous elements, and people from places we just don't like. So this plan gets approved, and we're going to, you know, we're going to try to shoot for somewhere around May of 1933 to make this work. Well, the secret police went gusto with this, and between March and July of 33, there were about 90,000 folks who were not issued passports in Moscow and Leningrad alone, forcing them to be drafted into the settler program, or they were sent to labor camps. By the time May of 1933 came around, 40,000 people were waiting to be shipped to Nizhinsky Island. They were being held at the Tomps camp, and there were so many new undesirables there that the leaders in charge basically, you know, were freaking out over how many people they now had to keep secure. And they asked multiple times for permission just to start shooting people. But that was denied. But of course, for some reason, which is really weird, there's no records from March or April about how many people died at Tomsky camp. That's just bizarre. It's an odd coincidence. All right. Well, finally, you know, May comes, and on the 14th, the Soviet Union has kind of borrowed some barges from folks that were using them to transport timber. And, you know, they said, we're going to start, you know, this relocation program. So 5,000 folks were tossed on these logging barges. They weren't of course, allowed to be in comfort in any shape or way. So they were kept, you know, below deck. Very packed, very nasty. Rations were a bit meager, as you could probably guess. Each passenger was given 7 ounces of bread to eat each day. From what I could tell, that kind of worked out to roughly 5 to 7 slices of bread. But I don't know how big these slices were or anything like that. But anyway, let's just imagine that you have to live off of 5 to 7 pieces of bread a day. That just doesn't sound fun. And, you know, it's not like this was an orderly thing where the guards would come around and hand everybody their little, tissue, bow-wrapped slices of bread for the day. They just kind of tossed it down into the lower deck of this barge. And if you got bread, you got bread. And if you didn't, you didn't. And that's really how the system went. On top of this, you know, we had an interesting mix of characters who were thrown onto the barge. It was, you know, half just the political prisoners and half real criminals. And so the real criminals figured out real quick that, hey, these political prisoners don't really know how to fight. They don't really know how to defend themselves. And so they kind of bullied them into giving up their bread whenever they even managed to get their hands on it. So you can tell this is just a beautiful start to a beautiful story, right? Remember how I said supplies were an issue? So these barges, they were under the command of 2 Soviet officers and 50 enlisted men who served as guards. They were spread across 5 barges, I believe. And these 2 officers and 50 guards were brand new recruits into the Soviet military. So they're young, they're inexperienced. And, you know, when I said we're talking about bare minimums when it comes to resources, that applied to the military members too. Like, you didn't necessarily get issued a uniform if you were a guard. They had plenty of guns. They had guns coming out their wazoo, but uniforms, no. Shoes, yeah, not everybody got shoes even. So, you know, the guards aren't terribly happy about being here. The 2 officers aren't wild about this command. And then you've got 5,000 angry people locked away in the hold of these barges. The only supplies that were provided for this new colony was flour. They brought a bunch of flour, like 20 tons of flour. Only flour. Nothing but flour. No tools, no cooking utensils, just white, powdery flour. It took the barges 5 days to move up the river to arrive at Nazino, which, like we said, is the largest city near Nizhinsky Island. During this time, you know, all sorts of bad things were happening in the hold. Nobody paid attention. So when they arrived at Nizhinsky, they had, of course, records to keep, because that was one thing, for some reason, that the communists were pretty good at. So the official tally of those who made it to Nizhinsky Island was 4,556 men, 322 ladies, and 27 dead bodies. Official journals also note that approximately 1/3 of this roster was unable to stand under their own power and had to be carried off the barges. So right away, we've depleted our manpower by over 33%. When they arrived at the island, the guards went to try to unload the flour, but that kind of caused rioting because, you know, people were starving to death. So got a little feisty there. And The guards ended up opening fire on the settlers in an effort to restore order. And the officer said, no, we're getting everybody off. We're focusing on that. The flower we can deal with tomorrow. So the next day came, and because people were a little peckish, again, bit of a riot when they tried to do the flower thing. So they said, all right, screw it. They sent the boats, the barges, back to Nazino. And they said, if y'all are going to act like children, we're not giving you flour. And it would be like another 4 or 5 days before they tried it again. But the guards and the officers had come up with a plan to make things a bit more orderly. All the prisoners were organized into groups of 150 people, which they referred to as a brigade. And each brigade would have one representative who the brigade picked, who would be sent to collect the flour for the people in his brigade, basically once every 3 to 5 days. Now, guess who were selected as the representatives? Yeah, the biggest bullies basically said, I'm in charge. If you don't like it, let's dance. So, these weren't the sort that were concerned about things like equity. So when it was time to go get the flour, they would get it, and sometimes they would share it. Sometimes they would share it with just their friends. Sometimes they would just keep it to themselves to make sure they survived. Since there was no ovens or any other cooking utensils on this island, really the only way you could consume it was to mix it with water to make kind of a gravy and drink that, which would kind of fill your stomach, but it also kind of caused a lot of dysentery on the island, which is super fun. If you've ever played Oregon Trail, you know what I'm talking about. The other way people would eat it, usually the urbanites, the political prisoners, once they got their hands on flour, they would just start consuming it directly. They couldn't take the risk of taking the time and mixing it with water and enjoying it that way, because there's a good chance that they were going to get punched in the back of the head and lose all the flour they had. So in doing this, there were actually a lot of suffocation deaths, because people would get the flour all in their lungs, and it's apparently hard to breathe when your lungs are coated in a fine white powder. I don't know. Never experienced it. That's just what the articles tell me. So again, we're not starting off great here. We've had a few strikes. Let's talk about the island for a second. We got to put this up to another strike. Not a great place to try to build an agricultural settlement. It was about 1.9 kilometers long and only 600 meters wide. That's roughly 3 miles by 660 yards. And, you know, it was a very wet, swampy island, and it was very cold because it's in Siberia. So, you know, it's a frozen swampland is where they've been asked to grow grain. Now, certain crops did grow on the island, but it's kind of helpful if you have the seeds to be able to plant to make this grow. Because that didn't occur naturally. Like, some forms of rice do pretty well in swampland, and they didn't have the rice. So, yeah, that was a problem. Never mind the lack of tools and the lack of agricultural knowledge. We're just stuck in a place that's not going to grow nothing anyway. Now, again, even though this is taking place in May, it's taking place in Siberia. So on top of all this, like I said, it's cold. It was so cold that the river that they traveled up was actually still frozen in places. And if you fell in the water, you were probably going to die from hypothermia. Another rule that the guards set was nobody was allowed to leave the island. That probably came from higher up the chain of command. But in order to enforce this, the two officers decided, well, we don't really have the manpower to patrol the island to make sure this doesn't happen. So guards, if you see anybody that's trying to leave the island, or you see anybody that successfully left the island, just shoot them. But again, they're kind of short on supplies. They don't have a ton of ammunition. And so if they saw somebody like actually trying to escape, they usually would just gather up and watch, because most folks there weren't good at building things. And so if they put a raft together, it usually wouldn't survive the flow of the river to make it to shore. And the men that fell in, again, hypothermia, you've got some rough waters. And apparently every morning there would just be new bodies kind of washing up on shore. The guards did kind of take their job seriously, to the point that if they felt like you were going to escape, if you just had that shifty look in your eyes, they may just execute you to make sure you didn't run away. Also, if by chance you were on a raft that held together and you did make it to shore, well, then the hunt was on. And they loved this, because then they would take a barge back to Nazino and just begin hunting the most dangerous prey, which in this situation was going to be a very tired, weak, starved human being with no supplies. So it was kind of cruel, even for Soviet standards. Fun bit of trivia, too. 9 days after everybody arrived at Nizhinsky Island, some more barges showed up, and they brought another 1,200 settlers with no new supplies, not even more flour. Now, there were certain people aboard this team outside of the numbers we've talked about. Some doctors were brought along to help with that. And apparently, there was a Soviet officer who heard about what was going on, and he kind of joined up with the second set of barges to see what the deal was. And he ended up kind of writing a report about the horrors that were going on this island, which we really haven't gotten to yet, just so you know. And this report went all the way up to Stalin, and he read it and he said, oh God, what have I done? And this Nizhinsky Island was supposed to be the first of a series of colonies. After learning about how things were going here, Stalin said, yeah, let's cancel. Let's just dump all this. So here's kind of what the reports told Stalin. The island was ruled by chaos. Gangs had kind of formed and taken over, each claiming their own territories. Since virtually no one on the island had any knowledge of agriculture, no efforts to farm were ever made. Basically, what the gangs did is just preyed on each other, killing lone wolves and taking whatever meager supplies their victims had. An economy began to develop that was based on a currency of cigarettes and gold teeth. And the gold teeth, by the by, didn't always come from dead men. Yeah. They could use these two items to trade with the guards to obtain additional supplies. The guards even got down with this new system and decided, you know, why should we trade when we have the guns? So let's just extort everybody. And if you didn't cooperate, you got it executed. In fact, if you committed any sort of minor offense in the guards' eyes, you were probably going to be executed. Unless you were a female. Yeah. If you're a female, you would be given the opportunity to trade your body for extra supplies and then probably shot. The doctors I told you about that were sent along with the crew, I don't think they made it past 10 or 11 days being there before they realized that this was a really dangerous spot for them to be in. And the guards had no interest in keeping them safe, so they boarded a barge back to Nazino and got the heck out of there. Now, obviously, the most precious commodity on this island was food. This is what caused the most fights. This is what caused the most kind of raids, I guess you would say, from one gang into another gang's land. They would have to do anything they could to secure enough food for each day. And as things became more and more desperate, cannibalism became the norm. That's right. Soon gangs were attacking each other, not to get resources or supplies, but just to, you know, try to knock off a few members of another gang so they could drag them back home and cook them up. The last doctor that left the island reported that on his last day there, there were 70 deaths and there were signs of cannibalism observed on at least 5 bodies. Guards found this kind of horrific, and so they went about trying to stomp it out and arrested / executed somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 people for engaging in cannibalism. But really, you've just let all these people loose on this 3-mile-long island. And there's only 50 guards. What are you going to do? So, this report, like I said, Stalin canceled all the future settlement ideas, but he also ordered Nizhinsky Island to be shut down as well. This is kind of like giving Freddy Krueger nightmares. That's how bad the situation was. Naturally, the officer that wrote this report and sent it on to Stalin had to be silenced, so he was sent to one of these labor camps where he didn't last very long. 2,856 settlers survived and were moved to other established settlements and labor camps in the roughly nearby area. 157 settlers technically were alive, but were in such bad shape, they were considered too sick to injured or move, or too sick or injured to move, so the guards just left them there. It was believed that within 2 weeks of being removed from the island, only 200 to 300 of those survivors, the 2,856, again, only 200 to 300 of those guys survived and were fit enough to work in their new settlements. There was also, once they were brought to these new camps, they immediately tried to run away and were shot, or they came with some sort of underlying illness. They contracted on the island and ended up dying from that. Now, this experiment didn't stop the relocation program idea, but it planted seeds of doubt. The final report that was distributed to Soviet Party leaders by one of Stalin's aides claimed that 6,114 quote-unquote outdated elements were sent to the island in May of 1933. Remember, we had two times that these cruise ships dropped their passengers off. When the first barges arrived and got everybody off, it snowed the first night there, and that happened a lot of the nights there. No flour was able to be distributed for 4 days because of all of the fighting. After the first 24 hours of being on the island, 295 people had been buried. The official numbers were that 2,200 settlers officially survived, thus making the survival rate 35.9%. Again, like I said, this upset Stalin. It also upset other party leaders. Amazingly, it caused disgust and shame in them. And so they decided to take some action. You know, they weren't going to stand for this. So those two officers that were placed in charge, The brand new recruits who were given nothing to make this work were thrown in prison for their actions. All the guards were also thrown in prison for their actions. And by the end of 1933, the Soviet party had said, you know what, we're not doing this relocation crap anymore. We're done with it. It's gone. It's buried. Speaking of Barry, they said, you know, we can't really let the outside world know about this because it doesn't make us look great. So, you know, one thing the Soviet Union was good at was having a bureaucracy, like an infamously complex bureaucracy. So they took the reports of this event and basically buried them, Indiana Jones style, you know. And this event would stay hidden until 1988, when a human rights organization known as the Russian Memorial Society was doing some research into some files that had previously been restricted or classified or what have you. And they uncovered this report, and the horrors of Nezinsky Island were kind of brought to light. Now, one thing about this island I didn't mention, because it doesn't really play into the story much until now, is there was a small group of indigenous people that lived on this island. And when they saw these barges coming and all that, they knew just in general that they needed to stay away from the Russians. And so they ran to the other side of the island, set up shop there, and would send spies out or scouts out every day to make sure, you know, they weren't moving towards them and all that. Well, in 1989, an elderly member of this indigenous tribe who was still alive and who had been alive when the barges first arrived was found and gave an interview with the Russian Memorial Society. And he spoke about, you know, just how chaotic everything was. And he provided pretty graphic descriptions of how people would be butchered, I guess, for food. He went into detail, great detail, especially on how females were dissected. Those who visited Nezinsky Island in the years following this event, so, you know, in the 1930s and 1940s, they said that you would be walking through the island, and it was full of tall grass, somewhere between, you know, shoulder and head high, depending on your height, and all of a sudden you'd kick a skull. You know, there'd just be a skeleton laying there that you couldn't see, or you'd stumble across this makeshift hut and find three or four skeletons kind of huddled together inside. The island today is known by locals in the area as Death Island or Cannibal Island. There have been several documentaries and books written and created about this horrific tale, none of which have English titles, so I'm not even going to try to pronounce them. You know, I've done an episode from Italy and now from Russian. I'm not, you know, I'm subjecting myself to enough here. Let me end this story with what I think is the most disturbing fact of all. Okay. We've talked for nearing 40 minutes on the nightmares that occurred on this island, how quickly it broke down into gangland violence, how quickly folks resorted to cannibalism. Guess how long this program lasted. Guess how long this colony was up and running or in the process of being built? Less than 3 weeks. Actually, less than 20 days. That's how bad things got. That's how quickly things went to crap. Less than 3 weeks, and Stalin was like, nope, we're done with this. I don't like this. We're moving on. It's unreal. All right, I know we're not really a history podcast, right? But this was such a bizarre historical event that had been hidden for so long and is just so brutal. I felt like we had to do an episode on it. You know, Stalin was creating just a human rights crisis all because He didn't want certain people living in his cities. And let's not forget that a lot of these people were only living in his cities because the Soviet Communist Party had screwed things up so badly in managing the economy and labor distribution that people were starving to death. So they came to the cities looking for food. They were looking just to survive. And like so many politicians throughout history and even through modern times, Stalin blamed the problems he created on someone else. But, you know, I didn't really honestly pick this topic because I wanted to talk about human rights laws or the like. I just wanted to cover it because it's one of those hidden, horrible secrets of human history that, you know, thousands of people are being murdered simply for living in the wrong part of town or having the wrong ethnic background. So, you know, shining light on this, I think, kind of helps us avoid mistakes like that in the future. We really need to avoid mistakes like that in the future, people. And what makes this event even more shocking, and I know that you were thinking, no, I'm all shocked out, Brad. We can't do this anymore. But we're gonna. A lot of the people who were selected for resettlement had committed only one crime. They were on the streets without a passport. And lots of these people, like, actually had passports. They just didn't have them on them when the secret police decided to hassle them. And they didn't, of course, make any effort to see if these people had the appropriate documentation. They just grabbed them up, tossed them into a jail, tossed them into a labor camp. Like, there was story after story like this I read. You know, one young man who was a student at, I believe, the University of Moscow at the time, decided to go visit his aunt who lived nearby. And while they were going to go to dinner, and while he was waiting for her on the street, some authorities came up to him and said, "We need to see your passport." And he said, "Oh my gosh, I left it back at my dorm or apartment or whatever." And they grabbed him up and took him away. The aunt came downstairs, had no idea where her nephew was. Another had an older man traveling to Moscow to receive medical care. He had received special authorization, special travel documents for this purpose, but the police just ignored it and just threw him again in a labor camp. There were multiple times where they would just raid local markets. You know, they would say, "Okay, Saturday morning, 8:30, we're going to go out there. You know, you stand over here, you stand over there. And we're just going to ensnare all the people we could." And they would arrest anyone who didn't have the appropriate paperwork to be there. And by anyone, I mean men, women, and children. And this is just how these poor people had to live. I mean, you could be doing everything right, have your passport and all that. And if the guy looking at it doesn't like it, that's it. You go to jail. You go to a labor camp. And get worked to death. And I want to stress, too, that all these numbers I've been throwing out relate only to the island. With police making so many arrests, that Tomsky camp, you know, not only was it being stretched thin when the settlers were there, but just in general, it was overflowing with prisoners. In fact, the plan actually was, we're going to take, you know, all these people and we're going to send them to the Tomsk camp and then they'll be sent on to Nizhensky Island. But because the settlement failed so quickly and so spectacularly, a lot of these people were never processed in any way and they just were left in the Tomsk camp and died there. Every June, the Russian Memorial Society organizes a memorial march of sorts where people travel from Tomsk to Nizhino to Nizhensky Island to lay flowers at a memorial which was erected in 1993 In an effort to kind of memorialize this horrific event in the hopes that it would never be repeated. And so I guess if you're ever in Siberia in June, you could be a part of this little March event memorial thing. Okay, going to stop there. And I'm going to take us straight to our palate cleanser, which I think we probably all agree is sorely needed after this one. I actually spent a lot of time thinking about what type of joke we need to hear after all this. You know, what's appropriate to follow such a heavy episode? And it quickly dawned on me there's only one correct answer, and I think you'll agree. Yo mama jokes. So here's a few for you to enjoy, okay? Yo mama is so ugly, your dad takes her to work every day just so he doesn't have to kiss her goodbye. Yo mama's so fat, her bathtub has stretch marks. This one, I think it's my favorite, but it's also the grossest one. Yo mama is so hairy that when she gave birth to you, the nurses had to treat you for carpet burn. Your mama's so dumb, her IQ test came back negative. Yo mama's so fat, she puts mayo on her aspirin. That's a good one. And finally, and most devastatingly, your mother is so heavy, it is affecting both her physical health and her self-esteem. Yeah, that one really burns. Feel free to use these jokes as you wish, you know, at work, with friends, a job interview, wherever it feels appropriate. That's going to do it for this week. As always, thank you for tuning in. We do love having you stop by. You know, please don't forget that I live only for praise. Oh, praise and chocolate chip cookies. So please make sure to leave a nice 5-star review and share the show with all that you know. If you want to feel like you're better than the average person in life, which, let's face it, we all do, you can be like Donnie Bag of Donuts. Greatest daggum name ever. And join our KMH Plus subscription. Maybe he'll share donuts with us. Maybe that'll become like a thing. We'll have like quarterly meetings and we'll get bags of donuts. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know that this, I haven't talked to him about this, but look, Donnie, if you're listening, okay, we got to work something out on that front. Okay. All right. It's only $5 a month unless, you know, you want to give more for some reason. And, you know, you get a couple bonus episodes per month. We've already had one this month, and God willing, I'll get the second out. There's no, you know, guarantee or warranties that you'll get 2 episodes a month. It's just if I can make it happen. But I've done pretty well. I think the membership would say I've done a decent job. You know, I've actually talked to some economists, and they've said that this is one of the most fantastic deals in the history of civilized man. You know, those aren't my words, and I'm certainly not just making this up. So, you know, just think it over for a second. Just think about it. But anyway, we're going to close up shop. It's been awesome seeing y'all again. Hope you come poking around next week. And, you know, let's avoid starting these resettlement programs. All right? Okay, cool. All right. Until we meet again, Brad out.
You survived another episode of Killing, Missing, Hidden, the podcast about bad things. Join us next time for another true and thrilling story.